So who do you think you are? Well, it's interesting because every time I sit down to do a talk, I hear that. But it's in a tone that I can, actually, I don't even think I can duplicate anymore, which I'm glad about. But it was a tone in which my mother would say it to me. Who do you think you are? That might be something very much like it. And it was always said to me when I had a little sass, or she thought I was a little bit too big for my britches. And it wasn't just me, it was all of us. I'm one of seven. So we heard that expression a lot. And it was never a question of curiosity. It was a question to put us in our place, and we knew it. So the undoing of that question has been an interesting journey, and still is. And it's so funny for me because, like I said, every time I sit down to write a talk, as a minister, as a reverend, I hear that voice. And I just say, I'm a minister. I'm a child of God. You know, so I have to remind myself of that. And it's amazing because some of the story that you're going to hear, it's so, you know, again, I will say, I always speak about what I need to learn. Always, always, always. It's never an accident. So, you know, it's interesting. We talked about that definition of unity, and I got to tell you, I think it would be really great to put it in the bulletin or somewhere that we could see it all the time. Yeah, I think that would be really awesome. And, you know, unity is part of the New Thought movement, right? And New Thought comes from the people who started this, you know, the Ralph Waldo Emersons, Henry David Thoreau, Ernest Holmes, Curtis Hopkins. And it's because it was new compared to Buddhism and compared to Hinduism, which is thousands of years old. This came in the 19th century. But it's also, New Thought is about what Krista said earlier, having a new thought. Having a new thought about who do we think we are, right? And once again, it comes back to what are we thinking, right? What are we thinking? So in the late 1980s, Connie Fillmore Basie, who was the great-granddaughter of Charles and Myrtle Fillmore, and at the time she was president of Unity, was asked to write an article for the Daily Word. And she was the first person who came up with the five unity principles. And she was answering the question, what is unity about? And she synthesized it to the five principles, which are, there is only one presence and one power active as the universe and as my life, God the good. Two, our essence is of God, therefore we are inherently good. This God presence, called the Christ, was fully expressed in Jesus. Three, we are co-creators with God, creating reality through thoughts held in mind. Four, through prayer and meditation, we align our heart, mind with God. Denials and affirmation are the tools that we use. And five, through thoughts, words, and actions, we live the truth that we know. So most of today's talk is about the first and the second principle. And I used... Many of you may have seen this book, but I use this book. It's a great little book by Ellen Davenport, The Five Principles. So, the first one, God is absolute good, everywhere, present. Or another way of saying it is, God is. Those are two words we have to remember. God is, right? The principle of one affirms that God is all there is. God is omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipresent. Now, this does not mean all powerful, but all power. It does not mean all knowing. It means all knowledge. And it means present everywhere, all the time. So God is the stars, the moon, the sun, the animals, the trees, and the people, which is you and I. God is. God is all that we are and all that we have. We can never be separate from God. So does that put a different perspective on the question, who do you think you are? God, I wish I could remember that when I hear that question, right? So we're talking mostly about unity principles, but I do want to go back to Thich Nhat Hanh, who's a Vietnamese Buddhist monk who said, I think God is on earth inside every living thing. What we call the divine is none other than the energy of awakening, of peace. We talked about peace within us, no matter what's going on in the world today, and knowing that God is in it all. Of peace and understanding and of love, which is to be found not only in every human being, but in every species on the earth. So this is how our oneness of God is defined. Paul told the Athenians, we live and move and have our being in God. In this oneness, God lives and moves and has its expression within each and every one of us. And everyone out there that we don't like, and everybody out there, unfortunately, who's creating war. But I had an interesting experience this week on how I created my own little war within my own little mind. I forgot who I was. But a God of oneness is eminent and transcendent, that is within us and all around us. We are like fish in water, largely unaware of the sustaining force in which we exist. Jesus always spoke of his oneness with God. Jesus, our master teacher, said in John 10:30, the Father and I are one. In John 14:7, he said, if you know me, you will know my Father also. And the writer of the book of John said, I am the vine, you are the branches. If a man remains in me and I in him, he will bear much fruit. Apart from me, we can do nothing. And when I hear apart from me, I think of those moments that I forget, I can do nothing. But when I remember, I can do anything. So, like I said, to make the first principle easy peasy, God is. Second principle, our essence is of God, therefore we are inherently good. This God presence called the Christ was fully expressed in Jesus. So human beings have the spark of divine in them, the Christ spirit within them. That's why I light the Christ candle. That's what we do here at Unity. We light the Christ candle to be reminded of that spark of divinity, which is in each and every one of us. It's not about a person. It's about the divinity within us. In John 10:34, Jesus answered them, is it not written in your law, I have said you are gods? In John 14, I wish my mother said it to me that way. In the laws, I have said you are gods? John 14:12, very truly I tell you, the one who believes in me will also do the works that I do. In fact, will do greater works than these. In Matthew 10:7, as you go, preach this message, the kingdom of heaven is near. We have all of these messages and we forget. I forget all the time. So the second principle is, I am. God is, I am. That's also a meditation that Sean talks about a lot, right? Remember, breathing in, God is, exhaling, I am. With principle one, we broaden our idea of God to a field of love and intelligence that is the foundation of the universe. God is not a supreme being watching, judging, parenting, or protecting us. God is the substance of all that exists, including us. Knowing this, now ask yourself the question, who do you think you are? This speaks to the need to reevaluate who we think we are as human beings and revisit the roles we are called to play in this creation. Most people still want to believe in a God that knows and cares about the details of our lives and that we can make a difference, or they can make a difference in what happens. But in principle two, the personal relationship with God shifts to merely relocating God to inside of you as you. Every culture and religion have a creation story, but whatever our wherever we originated physically, we were first the idea in God mind. And if God is still there, all there is, and everything is God, how can we be anything but divine? You and me are all expressions of God. The best example is the one that I mentioned earlier in the meditation. Our divinity compares humans to godlike waves in the ocean. Each of us has a different and distinct wave, but yet made of precisely the energy and attributes of Mother Ocean or Mother God. I love that analogy of seeing the ocean waves and knowing that in every wave is the ocean. We are the same composition, part of the divine flow. People who insist that humans are divine are often accused of thinking they are God. Well, guess what? They're right. I can hear my mother's voice right now. You are, exactly. Just as a tree is an expression of God, a mountain, the ocean, and an ant, a baby, we are expressions of God. And I want to say my mother's transitioned, so she does know that now. But I'm still hearing her human voice when she was here with the rest of us, forgetting who we are, right? There's a Hindu spiritual guidance. So this is another 2,000-year-old faith tradition in the Bhagavad Gita. And it says, there is one God. God pervades everything that has existed and all that will exist. All things are in me and I in them. Know that as the mighty wind blowing everywhere rests in the sky, all created beings rest in me. I am the father, the mother, the supporter, and the grandsire of the universe. So it's even there. It's even in the Hindu tradition. The Native American Indians see it everywhere, see spirit in everything. So we can never be separate from God, and we have only begun to tap into the power of the human spirit. Jesus tried to tell us this many times and demonstrated what was possible for human beings when we are fully aligned with the presence of God within us. He was able to love and forgive, heal and teach, because he was living from his God self or his Christ presence within him. He told us we could do the same. The same divine essence Jesus had dwells in each of us, imperfect as we are. This is the crux of the second principle. Our essence is of God. Jesus was not asking to be worshiped. He was showing us who we are and what we can do. People who knew Jesus felt like they were in the presence of God, that they encountered God. As we discover and uncover our Christ nature, we come to the Father or become more aware of the divine energy that animates each of us. So our job as humans is to live from the Christ of our being, the part of us that is God, our divine core. Some may say knowing we can rely on this divine self is an exaggerated sense of our powers, but it's actually the opposite. It is humbly turning to the divine within for wisdom and insight. It is to discover that God is closer than our breath, than our hands and our feet. To sum it up, the point of spiritual growth is to know myself as spirit and express it in my life. So I had an interesting experience this past week. So I have this couple that's getting married on October 13th. And from the beginning, I was telling them, you need to have a rehearsal. We should have a rehearsal. They didn't want to have a rehearsal. They didn't want a rehearsal. Okay. I said, well, we at least need to meet. So we met on October 1st. That's why I couldn't be here that day. And we went to the venue and we talked about the whole, you know, the lineup, the procession and everything. So Thursday before, now I really didn't feel a connection with this couple for some reason. I don't know what it was, but I just kept showing up, loving them, loving myself. Thursday, the night before the wedding, I get a call at 4:30. It's the bride saying, aren't you coming to the rehearsal? And I was like, I wasn't told about a rehearsal. Oh, I thought we talked about it. I said, I'm sorry. It's like 4:30. I still need to take a shower. They're in Brantford. It's like, even though Brantford's only 20 minutes away, at 4:30, Brantford could be an hour away. I said, sorry, I can't make it. Hung up. Felt terrible. Somehow felt like I dropped the ball. I was doing something. I went down this rabbit hole that was awful. Carried into the next day. Even though I called them the next day, asked how the rehearsal was and everything, I still was feeling really bad. And the wedding went off with just one little error that who knows if anybody noticed it, but I didn't even notice it until the next day I woke up and said I forgot to ask everybody to rise when the bride came in. Well, now I felt even worse about myself. I'm like, oh, I can't do this job. This isn't for me. I shouldn't be doing this. It was awful. And I had to do a wedding that day with another couple on Saturday. Well, this couple just praises me and thinks I'm the best thing since toast. I mean, they were just so grateful, da, 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 da. And it ended up to be a very long day. But the moral of the story is that how much I rely on what people see and say about me. It's all about still for me what's going on outside of me. I forget that I am God and that they are God and it's all good. And as I'm yesterday, this morning, I was like thinking about like, look at how much I give, how much of my power I'm giving away to these people. Wow. And I have to talk about this today. So that's what I'm saying. Like, this is all the stuff that I have to learn, right? Anyway, so it's really about us expressing effortlessly who we really are. And you may say, how do I do this in my busy day with everything happening? But our busy day is handled by our ego. Now, Krista talked about the aspects. She talked about three aspects of ourself last week, right? And I just want to say our ego is not a bad thing. It just forgets it's not alone, that it's not carrying out the entire burden of survival by itself, and it tends to overreact, our ego. But picture four essential parts of our human as Russian nesting dolls. Did you ever see those Russian nesting dolls? Okay. The smallest doll is our body. It's the spacesuit that we need to survive on this planet. Now, Ernest Holmes says in 10 Ideas That Make a Difference, our body is a spiritual body. Every organ, action, and function of our physical body is pure as spirit. Every breath we inhale is the breath of life, and the things we eat are spiritual substance. Our body is the kingdom of God. So that just added a whole different perspective for me about my body. Then we've got the ego, which that's the one I don't think that Krista talked about, but which we need. We need our ego because our ego does protect us on the earth plane. It reminds of what to respect, what to not be afraid of, but to be careful and whatever. And in its healthy states, it gives us the focus and confidence to function in the world. So it allows us to do all the million things that we decide to do, right, in our daily tasks. But the soul is the eternal, individualized creation that grows and learns and seeks an ever closer union with God. And then there is spirit, which is present in everything, everyone, everywhere. Is God the one, the same for all of us and always available? So it's spirit is what's connecting all of us, but the soul is the individuality of us all. And notice, you don't have a soul, you are a soul that has a body and an ego or personality. Our souls come to the earth to learn and grow and to evolve with conscious spiritual growth. Someone talked about God, walking through with God consciousness today. That's the soul saying, I want to walk this planet in God consciousness. This is the evolutionary drive we have. That's why you walk up those stairs every Sunday, to get a higher consciousness, to be relating at that higher level. We are never egoless. We need our ego, but it needs to be in service to our soul. This means giving up attachments to dramas of being human, the stories that we tell about our victims and our heroes, the dangers and the triumphs, the celebrities and the nobodies. Pretty much every event that could be the lyrics to a country song is our ego. Living from the soul does not mean that we won't have difficulties. It means that we will handle them differently. We will look at them differently. We will have a different thought about them, a new thought. And I just want to mention again, not to look at the ego as bad and the soul as good, because that's duality thinking, right? Once again, we will go into that duality thinking. Remember, everything is God, so everything is good. So God is principle one, and there can be no part of us that is not divine. That's principle two. There is no war raging between the human and the spiritual sides of us. We came to earth as spiritual beings to have a human experience, and all of it is valuable. Eckhart Tolle in A New Earth ruminated on the steadying influence of Christ within. He said, Jesus speaks of the innermost identity of every man and woman, every life form. He speaks of the life that you are. Some Christian mystics have called it the Christ within. Buddhists call it the Buddha nature. For Hindus, it is the Atman, the indwelling God. When you are in touch with that dimension within yourself and being in touch with it as your natural state, not some miraculous achievement, all your actions and relationships will reflect oneness with all life that you sense deep within. This is love. Law, commandments, rules, and regulations are necessary for those who are cut off from who they are, from the truth, from within. They prevent the worst excesses of the ego, and often they don't even do that. Love and do what you will, said St. Augustine. Words cannot get closer to the truth than that. So Apostle Paul said, Christ in you, the hope of glory. That's it for us. The hope of glory is the Christ within us. So does being divine mean being perfect? Absolutely not. Being divine is the imperfection of all of it and accepting it as it is. Think of a toddler. This was another analogy I loved. Think of a toddler learning to walk. Walking is already in them. They just have to practice it. Think of the perfect oak tree in an acorn. It has to grow and develop to allow the perfection of its expression. And who defines a perfect human anyway? We all have a different definition of what that is, or the perfect sunset, or the perfect storm. Each of us has different personalities, skills, talents, and interests that make us who we are. And it's perfect. We are all perfect. We are all expressions of God. One may look at the violence in the world and know that it's not perfect. Jesus assured us that the kingdom of heaven is at hand among us already here. Heaven and hell are states of consciousness that we create for ourselves while in the human form. As expressions of the divine, heaven is our natural habitat. So when I see or hear about violence, I have to trust God that there is a reason. Something must still have to be learned by us. Little by little, we are learning and growing and changing. We are equipped for building a kingdom, one choice at a time, through our conscious contact with supreme wholeness. We are never separate from God because God is who we are. Our worst experiences can be our best teachers and greatest blessings of our lives. The darkest human behavior can move us to compassion and to the expression of our highest selves. Remember the global outpouring of love and our sense of oneness from September 11th, 2001. And we have examples of that over and over and over again. And it doesn't have to be being attacked by someone. It could be the earth opening up to an earthquake and people losing their lives and how other people come together to help. That lives in all of us all the time, that love and that compassion. But for now, we still need tragic things to bring it about. So to summarize, we have a body, a personality, a soul, and a spirit. And you don't have a soul. See, I just said it incorrectly. But we are a soul. Our soul is here to grow in consciousness, and the ego works with the soul. You are spirit. You are one with God. You are God, and that's all there is. So my hope is now, you know, and you think just a little bit better about who you are. So I want to say thank you. I am your sister companion in prayer, possibility, and power. I see you, I appreciate you, and I love you. Until we meet again, remember you are blessed and a blessing.